Hello and welcome back to another week in the world of angel investing. You're listening to Angel Insights brought to you by Syndicate Room. This is a show that delves inside the world of some of the best startup investors to reveal their tips, tactics and strategies when it comes to finding and investing in the latest startups. And joining me today, I'm delighted to welcome a man who really has experienced all sides of the table. He's been a venture capital investor with Smedvig Capital in London. He is to this day an active angel investor with investments in the likes of Fab.com, Cabby and Zipcar, and he's now on the other side of the table as an entrepreneur himself, having founded Housekeep, London's top-rated domestic cleaning service, allowing you to find and book a local and trusted house cleaner in minutes. And if you'd like the show notes for the episode today, then you can find them on the site at syndicateroom.com under the Investors Academy section. But enough from me, so it's now time to pass over the mic to the main man, Avin Rebel, founder at Housekeep and angel investor. Now, I'd love to start with how you got into the world of investing. What was your start in the investing in startups world?
I've always been one of those people that's been fascinated by business from an early age. So I think I was aged about five when I first had a crack at setting up what could be considered to be your own business and ran a small magazine as a teenager and so on. And after finishing university at Oxford, went on to management consulting and then into venture capital, where I was for about 6-7 years investing in UK high growth businesses. And then alongside that, started making initially quite small angel investments, and now spend a little bit of my time on angel investing as well.
And I'm really intrigued then, what was the impetus behind your move into the transition to angel investing alongside VC first and then now alongside your entrepreneurial activities?
Yeah, so the original part was, as I guess I had a bit more experience in venture capital investing, we were typically investing £2 to £10 million in later stage businesses, usually with a few million pounds of revenue. And that we'd come across businesses that were much earlier, either starting point of revenue or almost pre-revenue, where you thought you've got an exceptional team here with a very good chance in a in an interesting market. And often we'd have multiple meetings over a period of time getting to know them. And actually, I thought, as they were raising small rounds of, say, £500,000, I'd like to get involved personally, particularly if it's somewhere that I could help.
And I'd love to hear then about how being a VC and being an angel differentiates itself in terms of your approach to investing in the startups themselves. How does the mentality shift?
Yes, as a VC, you'd want to make a very small number of investments each year in businesses where you're going to be reasonably hands-on. So board level involvement, we were typically lead investor, the firm that I was at, Smedvig Capital. So that meant allocating a decent amount of time to that portfolio company. I would treat angel investments as quite different. I'm never a lead investor on those, usually following somebody writing much bigger checks. And in those cases, I tend to be pretty hands off apart from where I can, what I would normally say to an entrepreneur is I can do 2 or 3 useful things a year for you rather than I'll be involved day to day or in board meetings or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And with regards to the kind of communication with the entrepreneur, having been an entrepreneur now and being an entrepreneur now with Housekeep yourself, how do you like them to communicate with you?
It's a good question. And I suspect I started Housekeep just over 2 years ago. And I suspect my, appreciation of what entrepreneurs do and how best to be effective has changed a bit over time, actually. So what I normally say to businesses where I'm an angel investor is when I've got something useful to say, I'll say it. Otherwise, I'll say nothing. And I'll try to limit my involvement to that. And if you want to talk about it, feel free to reply. Otherwise, don't reply. Because I kind of appreciate that actually, as an entrepreneur, what you don't want to do is answer 20 thought pieces from your investors each month. So I try to keep communication to a minimum unless there's something specific where I've got specific experience that can be brought to bear.
Absolutely. And I want to dissect the angel side of your life now a little more. And so once you decide that you wanted to start angel investing, say alongside your entrepreneurial now, you've left VC and you're angel investing alongside being an entrepreneur. Do you allocate a certain pool of capital for your angel investments? Do you kind of have a ad hoc basis of investing? How do you approach that kind of strategy side to laying it out?
Yeah, it's a good question, and particularly I think in a era where lots of people are investing in early stage businesses, and where investing in early stage businesses has been made significantly more accessible. The way I look at it is that early stage investing, even late stage VC investing, remains an extremely risky asset class, potentially high return, but risky. So actually, on a personal basis, what's a good asset allocation, even 10% is quite a big asset allocation, I think, to early stage. So I try to make sure it's balanced over what I'm doing in a year, and that it's not more than that sort of 10% mark. Occasionally it's a little bit higher, sometimes a bit less. But I also think about access to differential deal flow. So if you imagine that 10% of angel investments go very well, how do you actually access that top 10%? And I think that's quite critical when you're thinking about, as an angel, how much you should allocate. Well, if you've got access to differential deal flow, that's one thing. If you're actually just investing alongside everybody else who can access the same deal flow, that's a different thing, I think. And I guess the last bit I look for is diversification. So what you don't want to be doing is allocating cash to one investment a year. You want to be diversified across a bunch of investments, because you know the failure rate is going to be high. You know you need to be investing in a bunch of different businesses to get a portfolio effect.
And so much to unpack there, but you said about differential deal flow. How do you attempt to attain that differential deal flow? Is it through kind of your entrenchment in one particular market, like you are now with Housekeep, so you have a domain expertise that's above? Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I'm not sure anyone will ever crack the answer to that. I guess some people would claim that they've got access to the best deal flows. There are examples in the US, I suppose, Y Combinator would claim that they have access to 100% of the best possible deals. I'm not sure there's an equivalent in the UK or Europe, for that matter. The way I look at it is networks really useful. So one of the first things you look for is people in your network saying, I trust and believe in this entrepreneur. And obviously having a wide network increases the amount of deal flow that you see. But I'm probably still rejecting 90% of things that I see without much consideration. But above that, I think in terms of access to that differential deal flow, it's about your value add. So as with all things where there are exceptional entrepreneurs or deals to be involved in, actually the competition is to get involved in those deals, and entrepreneurs choosing your capital versus somebody else's. And I think in those cases, it's about what value you're bringing to the table. For me personally, that's the way I would express that is I've got a pretty unusual mix of, I guess, investing as a VC at a later stage, investing as an angel at an earlier stage, and then raising capital and growing a business as an entrepreneur. And what that allows me to do is say that fully understand what you're trying to do, and I can really sit with you and sort of be on the same side of the table, which I think a lot of entrepreneurs value quite a lot, actually.
Yeah, and you said there about kind of the allocation of your personal capital to angel investing. In terms of allocations then, and round allocations, do you have a maximum amount that would you ever be, say, 20% cornerstone investor?
Not at the moment. I have done in very early deals in the past. At the moment, given what I'm currently doing, which is running Housekeep and growing that business, my appetite for investing in other high risk early stage startups is somewhat diminished. I mean, if you think about personal portfolio, a big chunk of my capital allocation is effectively within Housekeep. So I'm probably not up for that right now, but hopefully in the future there'll be a point where I would be doing that again.
And you mentioned diversification there, and obviously with angel investing, a large part of success is diversification and then slowly kind of honing down and concentrating into the winning investments. So how much of a role does pro rata play in your investment decision making process?
I think it's helpful. I think there are points where I think angel investors typically operate in one of two ways. They'll either say, I'm going to invest half of what I'm expecting to allocate to this company now on the basis I'm going to invest more later, or they operate on a basis of I'm going to write a check now and then I'm going to leave this alone and deliberately not participate. I've taken a pretty flexible approach to that. Sometimes I have followed on and sometimes I haven't. It depends a little bit on progress, as you'd imagine, but it's certainly something I consider each time.
And then talking of kind of the differentiation, how have you seen the angel investment market evolve? You've been in it now for a while, considering your past being an angel and a VC. How have you seen that evolve and how's that affected your deal flow in the environment?
It's changed a lot, actually, particularly in the last 5 years. With one obvious change is transparency. So previously, there would be angel networks. There'd be a group of people behind closed doors with a small number of companies pitching. The second effect, I think, is liquidity. Bring significantly larger and new amounts of capital to the table. So it's changed quite a lot, actually. And I think that's largely positive, actually, for both for entrepreneurs and for angels, particularly as over time, hopefully, one of the side effects of these sort of public platforms is that we'll start to see published data on what is working and what isn't working as well.
And then talking kind of differentiated platforms that allow for new forms of deal sourcing and deal flow, how do you go about the deal sourcing process of investing in startups? Are you a hunter? Are you a kind of referrer? What's your preferred mechanism?
Absolutely a referrer. So it's all about the starting point would be either already knowing or having a very strong referral on the founder. That's always the starting point. I think there's one exception in 20 or 30 things that I've invested in on that basis where the founder was particularly exceptional. But actually, it's always been a case of referrals. And I think that comes back a bit to one's belief about differential deal flow. Differential deal flow comes from network and knowing people who have access to those superb founders.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then once you have access to those founders, what does the DD process look like for you? Is it a trust case of you trust the judgment of the referrer? Or how do you kind of deep dive and research the companies that have been referred your way?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it can be easy to get distracted by things that are actually not particularly important, like size of market or business model. I actually think they're low down the list for angel investments. That is, in particular, it's different at late stages. But I think it's all about founder evaluation. There's certainly piece around trust. Do you believe this person will run this business in the right way? But I try to ask founders reasonably open-ended questions about who they are and what motivates them. So rather than saying, tell me about your CV, I'll ask, tell me about yourself. And it's interesting what people say to that question. If you say, tell me a bit about yourself, people start from all sorts of different places. Some people say, when I was growing up, that X happened to me, and they'll weave that into a story about why they're doing what they're doing. Other people will say, the most recent thing that I did was I completed an MBA at a business school. And actually, they're very different responses in terms of who the person is, what they're motivated by, what they believe is important in life. Mm-hmm. And that's where I spend most of my time evaluating companies.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And you said there about markets and business models not being important. Something I completely agree with, but I'm intrigued to hear why at this stage of the market, that is. But I'm really intrigued then to hear why for you it's not so important in your decision making.
I think they're hygiene factors. So you want to ask yourself, is there a big market for whatever this product or service is, either existing or potential? If so, can you believe that this product or service can be sold with good gross margins, either now or eventually? If both those things are true, what you're actually then worrying about is how good is this founder going to be at executing in that big market with that good product or service? And it all comes down to how good is the founder going to be, rather than does it make a difference if the market's 1 billion, 2 billion, 5 billion, 10 billion? I'm not sure that's ever a problem when somebody's trying to execute. I think the main question for angels to ask founders is, do I believe this guy can get to the first million and to the 10th million? After that, we don't know, really. We don't know what the business will look like. We don't know what the team will look like. The question is, can they get to hurdle one? And I worry less about hurdle 24, which is, are you going to run out of market size when you're at £1 billion in revenue?
Mm-hmm. What do you think it takes then now? You've seen the market for a few years now. What do you think it takes then to successfully transition and progress through seed to Series A or maybe even Bridge? We could call Bridge a success of sorts.
In terms of as an angel in this particular case?
As an angel and then as a startup, I'm intrigued. What are the startups that you've seen progress well? What have they had?
Since the startup side is perhaps easier, I think it's about having an urgent problem that you're solving for typically a small group of people. Typically startups that seem to do well have what doesn't initially feel like a huge problem for many. It doesn't feel like a problem for many people, but they're solving a problem that a small group of people are extremely grateful that they're having solved. If you think about things that have done very well, you know, Uber when it started, Airbnb when it started, they were actually reasonably niche, and then they dramatically expanded their market size over time. What that means as well, if you're solving this urgent problem, is you're very focused on your core critical business rather than distracted by lots of things that actually aren't that important. And then you get into a nice place where you're in a sort of virtuous cycle of growth where people are referring you, perhaps if you're a marketplace on both sides, and you're sort of growing organically. And that's when you can really take off and become a big business.
Is it not more a case of traction and achieving product market fit on the startup side?
Yeah, I think it's similar. You know, product market fit's sort of similar way of expressing, I suppose, what I was saying in terms of finding exactly the product that really addresses what your market wants. I think typically product market fit is for a small group of people rather than for everyone straight away. And it's that focus that allows you to work out what are the kind of key problems people are facing rather than worrying about all the potential problems people are facing.
And then before we dive into a quick fire round, although you're a rock star angel investor and entrepreneur now, I'm sure there have been rocky patches along the road.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear what mistakes you've made and how you kind of learned from them and incorporated them into your thesis today.
It's an interesting question. Certainly my approach to investing has changed over the last few years as I've been doing some of it myself as an entrepreneur. I think an obsessive focus on team or founders now, particularly around motivations rather than their CV. So I spend less time asking people what they've done and spending a lot more time asking them why they're doing what they're doing. And then second, looking for ability to execute. Because actually a lot of people have good CVs, have a good story about market or why their business model would work. What you're really looking for is how good are they going to be at addressing that opportunity.
And so your mistake early on was focusing too much on product and market?
Right, rather than on team's ability to execute.
Absolutely, got you. And then I'd love to dive into a quick fire round. So
sure.
So let's go for your favourite investing resource. This could be book, blog, podcast, newspaper.
That's an easy one. Anything by Paul Graham.
And then what sector are you most excited by?
Services, both consumer and business services. I think a lot's happened in consumer services already, but business services will be shaken up in the next few years as well.
What does success look like in angel investing to you?
A balanced, diversified portfolio with good returns.
Mm-hmm. Crowdfunding, is it competition or is it complementary to the let's call it the financing market as a whole?
Absolutely complimentary.
And then your most recent public investment, and why did you say yes?
Cambridge Mask Company, who manufacture high-end filtration masks in the UK and export them to China. So quite an interesting counter story. And very simple reason, the entrepreneur who's running that business had run a very similar business previously, made money previously doing that business, and so he's highly credible.
Well, Avin, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure hearing your journey. And I look very forward to hearing more about your angel investments and from Housekeep in the future.
Thank you very much. Happy to help.
Absolutely awesome to hear Avin's journey as an angel investor and the exciting future that lies ahead with Housekeep. And for the show notes for today's episode, head over to the site at syndicaterum.com and head over to the Investor Academy, where you can find all the resources for today's show and for previous shows on the site there. We'd also love to hear what you think, so please do let us know on Twitter at syndicaterum. As always, we'd like to remind you that early stage investing is risky. Therefore, please do ensure that you engage in the proper due diligence prior to making the investment. Thank you so much, as always, for your continued support. We really do appreciate it, and we look very forward to bringing you next week's episode.